Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning. Happy Friday. You made it. 8:10 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola. Let's Go Pensacloa. 4 o'clock on Saturdays here on News Radio. Also the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook where they watch a movie and talk about it. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. All right, so
it's good to be back in Pensacola.
I know. Now you're going to say it wrong on purpose. It's going to be fun for you. Wicked for Good, the sequel, the follow-up, the second half of the Broadway show, and
so there seems to be this is not the first film that has taken a story that was originally one entity and turned it into two entities.
Right.
I think this really kind of started for a lot of people with the last, what ended up being the last two Harry
Potter
movies.
Yeah.
But then they did it with Twilight.
Right.
They did it with The Hunger Games.
Mission Impossible.
A lot of things.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of things have done this. It doesn't usually bode well creatively. You know, it's there are varying degrees of return on this, of course. You know, I don't think that the last two Harry Potter films are terrible, but for the most part, you find that this is stretching out material that was really maybe one film for less for artistic reasons than for commercial reasons. They're trying
Look,
to get
we used to do Bridge
there.
On the River Kwai and Lawrence of Arabia. They put an intermission and we lived, you know, go on.
So Wicked on Broadway runs about 2 hours and 45 minutes with an intermission.
Wow, it's not long at all.
Yeah, the first film that we got here, which is a great film, I really loved the first Wicked film, is also about 2 hours and 40 minutes, give or take. So now we have Wicked for Good, which completes the story, which is a little over 2 hours long. So you've got about 5 hours of material from a two and a half hour, basically, theatrical. It worked fine in the first one. In the second one, it feels really padded. And I have no problem with them expanding the world. I think that's not necessarily a bad thing at all. And there is some good material here. But I think in the end, they probably had about 3.5 hours worth of material. And this would have been a really good single, like 3.5 hour movie. And I mean, Avengers Endgame was 3.5 hours.
It was amazing.
So instead we've got, there's a lot of padding this sort of thing.
Okay.
It's not bad. The performances are unimpeachable. You know, Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are fantastic. All of the stuff you loved about the first movie is still there. The set design and the production design is all still great, but there is an awful lot of padding in here. And I think it also kind of suffers because we get into some of the events of the Wizard of Oz that we all know and love. And, you know, you're seeing them from a different perspective, but you're also seeing them from a distance.
Okay.
And I feel like, you know, we all know what happens in the Wizard of Oz. We didn't really
necessarily. Yeah, that's a take for granted, I would think. Okay, well, I mean,
yeah.
I assume everybody who saw the first one is going to see the second one. It's got a massive following and,
it's going to make $1 billion, and the audience is going to probably overall enjoy it more than I did. And you can see that on Rotten Tomatoes. If you look at the critics rating versus the audience rating, it's like 98% audience rating right now, but like a 70% critics rating.
Okay. Rental Family is another one that's out this week.
Yeah, Brendan Fraser, this is his big starring follow-up to his Academy Award-winning role in The Whale. This is another, like, a little more high-minded film. He plays an actor, I know that's a stretch, who finds himself in Japan and basically rents himself out to families as kind of a utility family member. I guess this is a thing that happens in Japan. I'm not aware of it, but I guess it's a thing that happens in Japanese culture, but he finds himself getting immersed in this role and starting to form real connections with people beyond what he's been hired to do.
Well, that sounds fascinating. All right.
Yeah, and very good reviews on this as well. This is running in the 85% range on Rotten Tomatoes.
And we have Sisu 2, Road to Revenge, which is a follow-up to Sisu, the kind of gritty, as I recall, what, Eastern European, you know, tough guy action movie?
Kind of a Ukrainian Rambo in the World War II era,
right?
You know, in a lot of ways. Really good reviews on this one too. This, you know, continues the story, which you know, I will freely admit I'm not overly familiar with, but the reviews on this so far are great. 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
All right, what are you guys going to watch next week? Do you know yet?
Well, there is but one choice coming to local theaters next week. And, of course, it's Thanksgiving week,
right.
So it'll be earlier in the week. They'll do a Tuesday night preview for Wednesday openings.
Right.
Zootopia 2.
Oh, which, okay.
You know, I was a big fan of the first Zootopia, so that's interesting enough to me.
Outstanding.
So we will be checking that out.
Follow them on Facebook, the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook, and also Let's Go Pensacola 4 o'clock tomorrow. Julio Diaz, always a pleasure, sir. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 8:15 on News Radio 92.3. PJ's got traffic on the fives.
Traffic's brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, visit KnoxPest.com. Knox knocks them out. I-10 and 110 both looking good right now. If you're in US 98 east and westbound through Navarre, that is flowing smooth. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives. Back to you.
Love is in the air at Anderson Subaru during the 2025 Subaru Share the Love event. Now through January 2nd, when you purchase or lease a new Subaru, Subaru will donate $250 to your choice of four nationally recognized charities: the ASPCA, Make-A-Wish, Meals on Wheels, or the National Park Foundation. Or you can choose our local charity, the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association, and Anderson Subaru will add an extra $200 to Subaru's donation. And for every routine Subaru vehicle service visit, Anderson Subaru will donate $5 more to the Pensacola Breast Cancer Association. So far, we've donated over $215,000 to help fight breast cancer in Pensacola. Share the love and support a great cause at the Subaru Share the Love event now through January 2nd at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
$250 donation per new purchase or lease. Promotion ends January 2nd. See retailer or AndersonSubaru.com/share for details.
Journey through a classic story of small wonders and big dreams.
Not a second can we spare, cause it all comes down to Christmas.
As one of America's favorite Yuletide movies comes to life. Ralphie, his family, and best pals. Live on stage. We triple dog dare you to miss the smash hit A Christmas Story, the musical.
Coming to the Sanger Theater in Pensacola December 2nd and 3rd. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com.
Hurricane season is here, and now is the time to make a plan and know your zone.
In the case of an evacuation, have a plan to go to a hurricane shelter, hotel, or stay with a family or friends. If you're ordered to evacuate, you need to leave. You can rebuild your home, but you cannot rebuild your life. This hurricane season, know your zone. Know your home. Learn more at floridadisaster.org. This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is not for anyone in particular, but for what is apparently a large number of defectors and traitors to our cause who simply must be called out for their treacherous behavior. Before I tell you what they've done, allow me to properly prepare you that this is very stern stuff. You will be shocked. Okay, everybody thinking about your happy place and gently nuzzling your anxiety-reducing companion fidgets? Here goes. This week, our most hallowed source of all truth, National Public Radio, reported on a very concerning trend of liberals, people of color, and LGBTQ2SIA 4chan plus minus people buying guns. I'll pause while you recover from your gasping. According to interviews of more than 30 people in the Gospel of the Present Moment at NPR, members of our cause are abandoning their fear of firearms and their principled opposition to self-defense by actually going to a gun shop. I know. Purchasing a firearm. I know. And even going to, what do they call it, a shootout rangy thingy, whatever, for practice. Now, to their credit, apparently some of them had to Google how to buy a gun first, which is good since we eagerly brag that the key things we who oppose gun ownership know absolutely nothing about are guns, gun use, and gun ownership, obviously. But yes, these interviewees all basically said the same thing. They're afraid of President 34 felonies and the totalitarian regime he is bringing down upon this country. They are afraid of roving mobs of angry conservatives who might try to convert them to believing in private property and small government. But most of all, they are buying guns in case of civil unrest. In other words, not only are these otherwise wokeites in good standing buying guns, horror, but they are actually buying them for the reasons that Second Amendment advocates have always said are the reasons America has a Second Amendment. In other words, they are validating the point that the death collaborators on the other side have always said. And by NPR reporting on this growing trend of gays buying guns to avoid being victimized and people of color buying guns as if they fear a return to the days of Jim Crow Democrats when they were kept oppressed and disarmed in the South, we are risking a whole generation of good progressives who might be tempted to believe in the right to keep and bear arms for their own safety. Can you imagine where we'd be politically if we didn't have the gun issue and all those years of demonizing guns, gun owners, and the NRA to work with? Guns have been one of our great fear-based political wedges. What would we have left to demonize them with other than the ineffective tropes of misogyny and racism and homophobia and climate alarmism? And you know the worst part of this? The article clearly tells us these people are so afraid of retribution and retaliation that they won't even give their real names as purchasers of firearms. But if they remain undoxed, how can we go visit them at home and persuade them of their mistake and properly re-indoctrinate them into the holy virtues of pacifism and weakness? No, this is a horrible development all around, and we beseech the rest of you, dear Otherin, stay weak, hold the thin, defenseless line, and use your words instead of violence to solve all your problems. And if the bad people come for your family and your home and your rights, just curl up in a ball and hope for the best. Denial and impotence are fabulous tools for dealing with any threat. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Republican Michigan State Representative Jada Boyer, for his outrageous recent antics at a hearing of the House Oversight Committee where he so rudely ambushed Michigan Chief Deputy Superintendent Dr. Sue Carnell with a typical transphobic gotcha question about what parents don't want taught in their schools.
They do not believe it is the role of the government to dictate these kinds of things. Things like, you said, the science of gender. How many genders are there? How many genders are there?
Different people have different beliefs on that.
Well, you can believe all you want, but science says there's two.
Well, as you immediately surmise, this little PR stunt Du Boyer performed was designed to make Carnell look foolish, but all it really did was expose his own ignorance. We all know that it's a ridiculous question because it has no correct answer. No one can say how many genders there are precisely because gender is not binary, nor is it trinary or quadrinary or even quintrinary. There are uncountable myriad of genders precisely because gender's not something you can categorize, baby. We literally call it gender fluidity, you Neanderthal. Fluidity means it varies along a spectrum. It's like asking how many shades of gray there are, and the answer is way more than 50. And when you put in all the colors of the holy rainbow, how many shades of all the different hues and tones? Well, you see the problem. And although Dr. Carnell, with her bachelor's degree in education from the University of Michigan and her doctoral degree in education leadership from Eastern Michigan, should certainly have known better how to answer the question, so many years of solid progressive indoctrination should have served her better. In this case, it did not. So instead of countering the question by explaining that there may be only two sexes, but an uncountably glorious rainbow of fruit-flavored genders, she sat there, smiled, and let the awkward silence become the story. And by the way, we note how unfair it is for this state representative to be questioning Dr. Carnell, since he has no degrees at all, having merely taken a few classes at the St. Clair Community College. So, of course, he knows nothing about the science of gender and sexuality. We didn't have hold of him long enough to teach him the truth. And to think that some backwards Michigander parent who actually limited themselves to a single-sex partner in the oppressed patriarchal construct of heterosexual marriage and then manufactured a child through the most boring form of sexual expression would be the person we should cater to in our educational objectives? Well, that's just childish. And completely contrary to the eternal pronouncements of science, according to this moment in history, the 21st day of October, year 2025, of the current era, without any reference to any particular religious personage, historical or imaginary. So with a finding that Dr. Carnell should be subject to remedial intersectional theory indoctrination level 3, we hereby order the outcasting of the real villain of this story, Representative Jay Du Boyer, whom we hereby pronounce excommunicado. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, an important note about our dear Mother Earth and our relationship with her. It has come to our attention that a recent study shows that the Atlantic Gulf Stream is on the verge of imminent collapse due to man-made global climate change. Obviously, we normally prefer to say human-sourced or person-originated rather than man-made for the sake of gender equality, but whenever the outcome is a terrible one, it's perfectly appropriate to call it man-made to remind people that nothing good has ever been made by an actual man. The Gulf Stream, scientifically referred to as the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, AMOC, which of course is how we will refer to it now on, according to Patterson's fourth thesis on declarifying communication, which reminds us to always be on the lookout for ways to make language less clear in order to make the uninitiated more afraid to ask questions for fear of exposing themselves as terminological outsiders. The worst kind of outsiders, really. So this AMOC, which is responsible for circulating immense amounts of warm water from the Gulf of Mexico toward Iceland and Great Britain, thereby warming them and preserving their temperate climate, is going to stop flowing any day now. And when it does, the countries who depend on it will be devastated by cooling comparable to what is experienced every winter in other normal latitudes like Canada and Scandinavia. In other words, we're facing a massive and dangerous cooling, possibly an ice age for Western Europe. Now, I know that we have been sounding the crisis alarms for a long time about the dangers of a hotter planet, so at first it might seem like a colder planet would be welcome news. Not so fast. Do you not remember, dear Otherin, when we were all scared during the 1970s that the observed cooling of the planet would continue and destroy us all? Until we realized that the planet was actually heating up to destroy us all. We must learn to take these fluctuations in the holy prophetic utterances of Her Majesty Science and not ask too many questions. If science now says cooling is the threat, then by Gaia, cooling is the threat. You must learn to be more nimble in your adaptation to the ever-changing nature of ideas that produce fear and anxiety. In fact, this is a perfect time to make sure you've all kept current your subscriptions to our most revered periodical. What Should I Be Afraid Of Today? The newsletter for environmental hypochondriacs that gives you the sciencey sounding words to make it seem like whatever you fear is legitimate. As a longtime subscriber myself, I can only assure you that this essential daily update continually reminds me of the most current trends in the important fields of emerging anxiety and debilitating paranoia, as well as reminding me which fear sources we are abandoning because they turned out to be nothing after all, or else have fully served their political purpose. So if you live in Great Britain or Iceland, quickly and quietly destroy your Stop Boiling My Planet signs and replace them with Stop Freezing My Planet materials instead. Then be sure to tell people you've always been worried about cooling and never worried about heating. And if anyone wants to send ice scrapers and mittens to England, we're collecting them in the We Care More Than You Do package in the back. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
827 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. PJ is sitting in for John Pickens today at Traffic on the Fives.
I-10 and 110 are both looking good right now. If you're in US 98, east and westbound through Navarre and Gulf Breeze, that is flowing smooth too. I'm PJ with your Traffic on the Fives.
And I do want to just note, because there's always people listening to the show for the first time or hearing Transgressors for the first time. And, you know, actually, there's been people who have been listening to the show for years and have never heard Transgressors just because they don't listen at that time, like they listen at 7 o'clock. And they're not aware of the podcast, which you can go back and listen to all of the show, either through the app at News Radio Pensacola or newsradio923.com on the website. But, yeah, all of those stories are true. The facts are always true. I never make up the base story. I embellish a little bit, but the base story is true and horrifying, usually. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. The White House says that President Trump does not want a group of Democrats executed. This after the president posted on social media Thursday saying the group should be tried for seditious behavior punishable by death. The president was referring to Democrat lawmakers that put out a video telling members of the armed forces that they had an obligation to resist illegal orders. The price of coffee is surging. That's tragic here in morning radio.
I don't know what we'll do.
I don't either. But
resort to criminal activity to supply our habit. Go on.
Luckily, the Trump administration is lifting tariffs on Brazilian imports. President Trump signed an order yesterday removing tariffs on Brazilian coffee, beef, and other food products that had been subjected to a 40% tariff last July. And North Carolina officials say the Border Patrol is now headed to New Orleans after leaving Charlotte. The Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office said Thursday that the immigration operation called Charlotte's Web had ended with about 250 arrests.
All right, David. Thanks so much for the update. 829 on News Radio 92.3. It is Phil the Mayflower Day. That means we will be out at Cordova Mall along with our sister station, Cat Country 98.7. Man, Brent always does, and the whole team does such a great job with this. But you can bring your food items, right? Your non-perishable food items. You know, peanut butter is always great. Peanut butter is always welcome. Oatmeal single serve packets, not the big canisters. Canned mixed vegetables, canned fruit, and 100% juice. Microwavable dinners, again, not refrigerated. You know, Hormel completes that kind of thing. Chicken and tuna, canned or pouches, are good. And money. You know, MANA is one of those organizations that we support with our tithe every single year. We really believe in them, and I'll be out there later on this morning at Cordova Mall. The Wrap is coming up next. Stick around.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. A pointed message. The House votes this morning to denounce socialism. The same day, socialist mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani meets the capitalist President Donald Trump. But Trump holds the key to federal funding for the plans Mamdani wants to carry out, like free buses. As the Trump team looks to persuade Americans, hold on, affordability is around the corner. The Trump economy is starting to kick into high gear, they say, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent tells Fox.
We're going back to Trump-style growth, which is high growth, low inflation, which is just the opposite of the Biden years.
Optimistic about acceleration in the first, second, and third quarter next year. The Department of Justice sues California Governor Gavin Newsom over giving illegal migrants college tuition benefits, calling it unequal treatment because U.S. citizens are not entitled to the same benefits. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3, and right now we've got 66 degrees with cloudy skies here in Pensacola. We'll get to our forecast in just a few minutes with meteorologist Brooke Richardson and Channel 3. Florida regulators have approved a rate settlement that will cost FPL customers billions of dollars over the next 4 years. The Public Service Commission voting yesterday to allow base rate increases of $945 million for 2026, $705 million for 2027, and additional charges in the following years for solar and battery projects. Residential customers will see their bills increase. FPL says that the settlement will keep rates reasonable and bills below the national average. Consumer advocates are opposed, and they say they plan to appeal it to the Florida Supreme Court, calling the increases excessive. A disturbing video on social media has led to the arrest of a Mobile teacher on child abuse charges. 44-year-old Randy Nicole Staples worked at a Cottage Hill Christian Academy as a second-grade teacher. A video posted to Facebook and filmed by a family member surfaced online showing Staples striking her 12-year-old son repeatedly more than 20 times in just 14 seconds with what appeared to be a belt. The video also showed her grabbing the child by the hair and verbally berating him. School officials say they acted swiftly once they learned of the November 19th incident, placing Staples on administrative leave and terminating her employment. She'd been honored as the Teacher of the Year at the school only months earlier in May. Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch described the actions as sickening. Staples has pleaded not guilty. Ferry Pass is losing its 100-foot aerial ladder truck due to a staffing shortage. Fire Station 7 doesn't have enough crew to operate it, so that truck is being moved to another station. The problem is that area does have dozens of multi-story buildings, including HCA Florida West Hospital and the UWF Apartments, that would need that ladder truck in the event of an emergency. Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger says inadequate funding is to blame and said the fire department should have four-person crews to meet national standards. Firefighters say they have mutual aid agreements in place with neighboring agencies to provide ladder trucks if needed. Gulf Shores police have arrested a mail delivery driver accused of stealing mail from dozens of homes in Baldwin County. Investigators say they recovered over 1,000 pieces of mail, which included checks and legal documents, from his car and from his home. The theft is one of the largest cases that Gulf Shores police say they've ever seen. Bryant Nugent faces two felony charges under Alabama's new mail theft law that took effect in July. Environmental groups are suing over a planned offshore drilling lease in the Gulf. Earth Justice filed a lawsuit challenging a lease sale that's scheduled for December 10th for 80 million acres. The groups say the government didn't follow environmental laws. They were worried about endangered whales and pollution impacts on coastal communities. The Trump administration's Department of Interior says it is following the law. It says an environmental study was completed in August and addressed the concerns. The department says new oil and gas development would support the economy for decades. Well, Nashville just got a bit closer to Pensacola. News Radio's Chris Bryan with this report. He says a Legionnaire is heading to the Music City.
Gulf Shores International Airport continues to grow, with Allegiant Air now introducing new nonstop flights to Nashville. The flights will operate up to two times a week. Drew Wells, Allegiant's chief commercial officer, says the route is expected to be popular in both directions. One-way tickets on these new flights start at $39. Chris Bryan, News Radio 92.3.
Thank you very much, Chris. And it's 8:35. PJ's got a look at our traffic on the fives.
Traffic's brought to you by Bell's Brand Style and Selection. Shop Bell's Florida this holiday for gifts for the entire family. Up to 60% off everything, holiday-ready apparel and accessories. Bell's Florida, family-owned for 110 years and counting. There is a vehicle crash, Muldoon Road at Softly. They say there's a partial roadblock there, so use caution. Also, a hit-run crash, North W Street at Jordan. Saying the roadway's clear. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Today we are going to be seeing that fog burn up as we head into the afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, high near 78 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 68. For Saturday, 20% chance of a stray shower in the morning. Otherwise, partly cloudy skies, high near 78. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. Going into Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high near 75. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 57. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And it is 66 degrees with cloudy skies. And your money now this morning, taking a look at our markets here at the opening bell. They are up this morning. The Dow is up about 0.5% at 45,983. The S&P up just under 0.5%, 65,68. NASDAQ is up just over 0.5% at 22,190. 10-year bond rate today down at 4.073%. Gold price is up $6.50 at $4,066.50. Silver is down just over a buck at $49.26 this morning. And crypto down across the board, with Bitcoin down over $1,600 at $84.876. Ethereum's down $68.20 at $27.67. Solana, Dogecoin, XRP all showing losses as well here this morning. Taking a look at our financial headlines, Warner Brothers Discovery's reviewing acquisition offers. Multiple reports say Paramount, Skydance, Netflix, and Comcast have all submitted bids before a deadline yesterday. Of those three, only Paramount is reported to be interested in buying all of Warner Brothers Discovery. Comcast, which also owns NBC Universal and Netflix, are reportedly only interested in the company's studios and streaming business. The possible sale comes just over 3 years after the Warner Brothers Discovery merger was completed. The Trump administration is lifting its tariffs on Brazilian imports. This comes as coffee prices are up. The president signed an executive order yesterday removing tariffs on Brazilian coffee, beef, and other foods. WhatsApp is relaunching an old feature that's new again. The About feature lets people post quick status updates that are similar to Instagram notes. About was an original feature of WhatsApp. The Meta-owned company hopes it'll start getting more use. 8:38, our next news at 9, and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
The hip, the hip, the hip, 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 hip,
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Yes, that's a wrap. It's a chance to talk over the news of the week with a couple of friends here in studio, like we're having beers, which we should do, or like we're having coffee, which we are doing. Josh Newby, of course, Executive Director of the Council on Aging West Florida. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
He is my token liberal and token liberal friend.
Oh. Token liberal friend. Token friend liberal. Let's put friend first.
Oh, all right. I like that. Friend token liberal?
Friend token liberal. In that order.
It's clunks right off the
tongue. Yes, yeah.
Jonathan Jonathan Owens, my token conservative.
Oh, wow. You only have one?
Yeah, you only have one.
I don't know.
I think you might actually only have one fiscal conservative.
Oh, wow. Look at that. A little shade. Fair enough. Good to have you back, sir. Okay, so let's since we're there, getting an outside analyst in to look at the budget in Escambia County and tell us where to trim, where to hire, who to pay more, how to prepare for the property tax apocalypse that's coming, and all of these things. Ashley Hofberger says, let's hire somebody to do this for a living because they're not going to be a part of the existing structures, the existing bias, the friends and family network, and all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Stephen Barry and Lumen May say, you know, in much more long-winded answer, hell no. You know, Steve Stroberger says, I'm down. And Mike Kohler says, I'm sort of down with it. I just don't want to hire somebody from the outside. I think I've got everybody's position basically right. Mm-hmm. Jonathan, you have some passing familiarity with county government.
Yes.
You were the chief of staff for Doug Underhill when he was the District 2 commissioner. Yes. So, and thoughts?
Still lingering on. Excellence invites scrutiny, right?
You're right. Yeah.
Hey, if there's
the better you are, the more you want somebody to look at it and see if you can do it better.
Right. Either to brag or to, you know, show me where I can be better. You know, you want to play better football, play with better football players, right? Hire a professional coach. I mean, just insert any. You know,
yeah.
Yeah. I think Ashley was going down the right road with saying, hey, you know, I want someone that's not biased to whatever.
Get right up on that mic.
Sorry.
It sounds so.
Oh,
yeah, there it is. Oh, there it is. Oh, yeah.
Beautiful bass.
My ear hole.
My radio voice. I think she was heading down the right path. Hey, let's do this. If we're going to have a study, actually use the information for making a change.
I don't understand these words you're saying right
not
now.
Not talk about it and, you know, kick the can down the road.
Right.
Commissioners have a way of doing that.
And yeah. And that is a fair criticism. I mean, this came up in the ECAT study, right? Is Mike mm-hmm. Kohler, who apparently didn't even know we had, like, we just did an ECAT study 2-3 years ago, something like that. And now we're going to do, or the proposal was to do another one, which I actually agree with based on the availability of microtransit. It makes sense. Yeah. But they said not to do that one because they've already got data. Well, they don't have current data. But anyway, but yeah, if you're not going to follow it, then there's no point in doing it.
Right.
But
right.
if you are willing to follow it, then by all means, of course, I suspect that's why Stephen and Lumen have no interest in this, because then they'd be obligated to do something different.
Yeah, the irony of spending money to save money is not lost on me, but I think you're exactly right. I mean, you're too close. Everyone in county government is too close to the numbers to see any sort of objective light. And that's just human nature. You know, I don't think that's necessarily anyone's fault. But yeah, let's get an outside analyst in. Let's see what we can do for the rollback rate. And I particularly take issue with not necessarily the budget, you know, let's analyze, let's not analyze, whatever. I tend to lend on Kohler's side of the issue. You know, we're not sure what property taxes are going to, what implications that's going to have. But at least let the commissioner bring the item up.
Oh, I mean, right. From the previous meeting.
That struck me as just so blatantly corrupt and bordering on sacrilege. And I mean, they said it from the dais. Stephen Barry said from the dais, you may not have support for this. How do you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, that
and,
really
And to be fair,
me.
I asked Wes Moreno when he was on the show on Monday, I asked him, you know, did you talk with Stephen about this ahead of time? He said no. Okay. So whatever Stephen might have been implying, you know, Wes denied that actually took place. So, you know, credit people at their word.
Yeah.
But he sure made it sound like he was the one that stopped it. You know, Stephen Barry did. And that's awful. I mean, the idea that, well, you can't bring it until you know you've got support. Well, how would you know you've got support until you bring it?
Right.
That's the whole point of the Sunshine Law, right? Is you find out whether anybody's on board with you.
Does this strike anyone, and this is where I assume I'll find disagreement in this room, Stroberger has been very vocal about wanting to cut outside agencies.
Yeah.
Does this strike me as a backdoor?
Well, I was going to wait, because that did come up in the conversation. Okay. I was going to wait on that, because I know that's a passion for you, obviously. Sure. I mean, you are an outside agency executive director. But do you think they actually will hire an outside? Because I think right now the way it sits is you've got three votes to do a deep look at the budget, but I think you've only got two votes to hire somebody outside. I mean, Stephen and Lumen are going to say no, no, no across the board. I think Kohler doesn't want to go outside. Do you think that's what's going to happen here?
Who knows?
Okay.
I mean, if they bring an outside, again, say they bring someone.
Yeah.
Great. What are they going to do with it?
Yeah. Well, you that's know? True. You got to have the courage to actually implement it, right?
This is not, local government didn't just start, you know, last year.
Right.
This has been going on for, you know, since, this, you know, we're one of the oldest counties in the state of Florida, and we can't figure it out at this point, you know, how much we're going to spend next year.
Right. And, and you know, look, they both, Stephen Barry and Lumen may both have 13 years, right?
Right.
They should own this.
100%.
Which either they should, if it's excellence invites scrutiny, they should be excited to have an outsider come in and validate, because then they could, you know, I mean, you know, Stephen could basically say to the Scambia Citizens Watch folks, see, it's fine.
Right.
If they thought that would be the outcome.
Oh, that's the
But, you know, I have a different slice of this that I want to ask you guys about. Hang on for just a second. We got PJ with Traffic on the Fives.
Still working that vehicle crash, Muldoon Road at Softly. They're saying there's a partial roadblock. Use caution. Also, a hit-run crash at North W Street and Jordan. Roadway's clear. I'm PJ with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. The outside versus inside thing to me is interesting. And the analogy I use a lot is when you first start a job, you go into an existing corporate environment or whatever, and in that first, like, 2 weeks, mm-hmm. all the crazy stuff looks crazy to you because it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And after about 2 to 3 weeks, well, that's just the way you do it.
Right.
And you lose that outsider perspective. And, you know, I think that's true in any organization. It's certainly true in the county. And so everybody's accustomed to, this is the power structure, this is the budget, this is how we do things, this is how we solve problems. And outsiders come in and are like, are you high?
Right.
What are you doing? But even after a couple of weeks, did you see this, Jonathan? You were in government for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you guys were the outsiders, you know, the underdogs, the rebels, the whatever, the troublemakers. Okay. Did you even lose that ability to see what was wrong after a while?
In some cases, yes. And then I would get reminded, this is not good. And it's natural, right? Rule number one is to keep your job, right? In 80% of the world of employees, right, keep your job. Rule number two is do the least you have to do to keep your job. In government, it also covers that, you know, keep your job. And in a political world like local government, either city or county, the staff is always kind of in fear of what do I need to tell you to make sure I, you know, keep my job?
Right.
You're not encouraged to say, you know, show me your warts. Show me the problems that we need to fix. Like, you know, do you have too many people on staff? Because that involves, you know, people's lives and their jobs. Right. I mean, what director is going to come and say, you know, I really need to cut, you know, 4 or 5, you know, folks in my department because I just think we're doing too good a job. You know, no director is going to come to you and say that, but you're right about, you know, you start a new job, you're gung ho. I'm here to save the world. You know, I want to make a change.
Right.
Only to find out that, you know, you will fall into keep your job if you make too much noise. Depends on what kind of feedback you get, right? And if folks are getting feedback that you know, we kind of done that away a long time. You're the new guy here.
Well, then
you
hear that from Stephen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, you know, here's the context that you don't know because you're new to this. Which, and it's not that that's always wrong. I mean, sometimes there is wisdom in the tradition and the process exists for a reason, but not always, you know.
There's also value, I think, in having someone unafraid to ask the stupid questions.
Right.
And having to justify things anew.
Right.
Because, to Jonathan's point, you know, if you have a new employee, they want to make a good impression.
Yeah.
You know, they want to suck up to their boss, and they may perceive that certain questions are stupid.
Yeah.
But a consultant doesn't have that problem. You're, in fact, paying them to ask those stupid, uncontextualized questions.
Right.
And then, force staff to justify why do we do that. And if there's a justification, great. If there's not,
And unless you're stupid, you learn very quickly whether you have a boss that wants to be challenged,
right,
corrected, brought bad news, or whether you have a boss that wants to be praised and fawned over and told they're beautiful and shiny and, right, and brilliant and never wants to hear the bad news. And, you know, everybody's a human.
Right.
You know, nobody really loves to be told they're wrong. But some people have learned that, gosh, that's what excellence demands.
That's right. That's right.
You know,
how you get better.
You know, Greg Louganis doesn't want to be told what dives he does well. Mm-hmm. He wants to be told, how can I improve it, right? Mm-hmm. And so anyway, to your point that you brought up a moment ago, Josh, again, this is The Wrap. We're talking with Josh Newby and Jonathan Owens. I'm Andrew McKay. Welcome. Good to have you on a Friday. But Josh, the outside agency thing, there's, in my mind, there's sort of three elements of this question. Okay. First of all, is the whether there should be outside agency funding at all. This is, you know, helping basically charitable organizations like you guys.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The second question would be whether the funding should be decided by the individual commissioner through discretionary funds that is formally approved by the whole, but is really up to them to just spend, or whether it should be done through the entire group through some official formalized budgetary thing. Steven Stroberger says, look, I am sick of people coming to my office and asking me for money. I don't like having to figure that out. I'm just not spending it. And also, I don't think that's my job, is to be spending what would be charity money from you for somebody else. That should be done privately through donations. And then you have the complicated political question of, if outside agencies get a lot of funding, there are a lot of outside agencies in this county, then all of a sudden you have a lot of people who aren't going to be stepping up and being very critical of the commissioners because the funding and their jobs kind of depend on getting that funding,
sure,
which is a, you can call that corruption, you can call that, you know, buying politics or whatever, but it's a problem. It's
sure
a problem. So what would it mean? I mean, like, to get rid of discretionary funding and or to get rid of all of the outside agency funding, what would that mean in the county? Not just for your agency, but
right
for everybody.
I mean, I guess this really gets to such the philosophical question of the role of government, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely
the lives of its citizens. And there's a school of thought that, you know, the government is only in place for, you know, protection and infrastructure and, like, you know, the very basics.
Fire, cops, roads, ditches, stormwater.
Right. The thing that the private sector has
just
no profit incentive
right
to do or doesn't do well. I mean, I'm of the school of thought that government also exists to serve those who cannot help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The children, the elderly, the disabled, the vulnerable. I mean, I think the mark of any institution or government or bureaucracy is, not to borrow Commissioner May's phrase, but how it serves the least of these.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the sort of, you know, ideological, you know, idealistic lens. But also, I think there's a pragmatic side here too, which is that a lot of these outside agencies use these funds to do things that the county would otherwise be on the hook for. For example,
that the county would have to pay for the consequences of not having been done.
Exactly.
Like, if you don't teach kids and have them in, you know, if the kids aren't taken care of, eventually they become criminals, and it's very expensive to take care of criminals.
Right. Serve them on the front end.
Right.
So that you don't have to deal with them on the back end.
Which is Lumen May's argument all the time.
Sure, sure.
And
I think it's a good argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but the county has a share of Medicaid that they have to put up, right? Mm-hmm. They have to provide local match to the state, to the feds. And so organizations that slow the growth of Medicaid are saving the county money. To pat ourselves on the back for 20 seconds, you know, we get $40,000 in outside agency funding. We use that for federal match to draw down $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
So by giving us $40,000, there's a net impact of $360,000 on top of slowing the growth of Medicaid. I'm not saying every outside agency doesn't do more than we do or doesn't have less of a financial impact than we do, but I can only speak authoritatively on my particular mm-hmm agency. I think it would be a loss. Now, I think an interesting conversation to have is who functions as a contractor, like Keep Pensacola Beautiful,
yeah,
and who functions as an outside agency. That strikes me as a distinction without a difference, but I think that's a conversation to be had. But I will say that—
And by the way, just to elaborate for a second,
sorry,
this had come up in—I forget now, it was a TDC or some—Charles Bear was involved because he's, what, the director
of KPB.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, the issue is— are we hiring this organization as a contractor to do a service the way you would hire a business to do something, or are we giving them money because they do charitable work that does something effective and beautiful and wonderful for the community? And Ashley had been wanting, I think, to move them onto contractor status.
She wanted a competitive bid.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Which you only get through a contractor basis and not through an outside agency basis. All that very long-winded way of saying that I'm very in support of outside agencies, not only because my agency benefits.
Is one.
But also, I just think it is the role of government. And nonprofits, say what you will about them, are the most efficient way of delivering these services in our county.
Jonathan?
I agree with the outside agency.
Get up on that mic, man.
Sorry. I agree. Forget we're talking to the people, not just the people in this room. I agree without having outside agencies, but what position do you put the outside agencies? Do you put that before infrastructure? Because we have lots of failing infrastructure and lots of things that we could do better here in Escambia County. So I can see if we're at a surplus standpoint of providing services to outside agencies as part of our local government, great. We're not there. I've seen it. You have seen it.
Sure.
We drive here every day.
This is the $5 million roads budget into what should be a $17 million roads.
Right.
Should be item.
Exactly.
Right?
And again, it's picking winners and losers. And how do you determine who's the winner? Is it someone who made a campaign contribution? Is it someone that kisses your butt more than others?
Sure.
I find,
not to disparage your agency.
No,
at all.
Not at all.
But,
I understand.
I find it weirdly. I don't mind it for the larger entities that are, you know, clearly doing, you know, important work.
With measurable data.
Yeah, yeah,
you
sure.
Know,
that is
scrutinized.
That is saving us money. I mean, that's that.
That are audited.
Right.
For excellence and budgetary.
Yeah. Oh, that do the same thing that we're saying we should do for the county. Yeah.
Right.
It's
which we are.
Weirdly, the ones.
100% you are.
The ones that bother me more are the $1,000 to this athletic club or the five. It's the discretionary.
The discretionary.
And weirdly, those are tiny drops in the budgetary bucket. It just feels so much more like I'm the big man on campus spending somebody else's money to look like we're doing amazing things. And the, oh, sure, I'll throw $1,500 in for you, Commissioner. You know, that whole thing just makes me feel so icky.
I see your $1,500, and I'll raise
your
$3,000 on that magnanimous contribution you're making to the cheerleaders at some high school.
There was actually, you know, there was a conversation in Milton recently where her name suddenly escapes me. I'll think of it in a second. But she was opposed to funding a ROTC program, but she specifically said, "I'm going to vote no on this, but I'm glad to donate out of my private money for it." And
okay.
I really appreciated that. Traffic on the fives with PJ.
Thanks, Andrew. I-10 and 110 both looking good right now. Not showing any slowdowns, Pine Forest or Carr City. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
It was Marilyn Farrow, one of the two people that I criticized the most. I thought that her.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Right. But, you know, I think that saying that she's not for ROTC was, you know, for funding ROTC is going to probably cost her in the election if it comes back up. But I actually appreciated that she was going to, I'm going to vote no on government, but yes on personal. You know, okay.
Can I ask a quick question on Jonathan? Because he asked about the infrastructure. So,
Burrito Key Bridge.
I'll challenge that and say maybe sometimes it should come before infrastructure.
Okay.
What data would you like? Would it be like literal lives otherwise lost that would have to, in your mind, place an outside agency funding ahead of infrastructure, or is infrastructure a golden cow?
I think infrastructure is a golden cow.
Really, untouchable. Even if lives are being lost.
How do you measure lives are being lost?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you could measure it.
Right. You can't measure it.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's theory versus application.
And in some cases, you can measure lives lost by failing infrastructure.
Sure.
You know, Sorrento Road,
yeah.
You know, for instance, right? You can see some of that.
That's also personal responsibility, though, on Sorrento Road.
Of course.
You know, the road did not kill someone. Alcohol and speed
is
what killed most people on Sorrento Road. I mean, ask Chip.
Right.
I mean, he'll give you the data. I mean, if anybody's got it, FHP and...
So you don't take the human infrastructure argument.
It's tough.
Okay,
that's
fair. I was just asking.
It's tough.
Well, like think about something like education. You know, why should I, just generic person? Okay, why should I pay for school costs for somebody else's kids? Right,
because it helps society.
But the flip side of that is, well, if people don't know how to read, it's hard for them to participate in a democracy.
Right.
You know, and then you get criminal behavior. I mean, you know, the idea is, we want people to have basic education so that they can be productive members of society. We want them to not become criminals. And a democracy depends on an educated, you know, not just populace, but workforce also.
Sure.
And so that is a government function because it does benefit the community in a way that if you really just leave it up to every individual, it's not clear that it works all that well.
Right, because a homebound senior adult may not want her tax money going to roads she can't drive on.
Right.
She would much prefer the tax money
or
going
education,
to
education.
Exactly.
For that matter.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I had kids in three decades.
Right.
Why
right.
am I paying taxes for somebody else's kids?
And that's a case where you're talking about disabled persons or where you're talking about the elderly. You can't make the future costs argument as easily because, you know, the 80-year-old homebound senior isn't going to grow up to become a Coke dealer, you know, that you have to put in jail. I mean, like, that preventative argument doesn't apply. But look, we are, you know, like it or not, we are a largely a Christian nation. We are a generous nation, a charitable nation. And there is that sense that if people are not being taken care of, then, well, government is the last resort for all problems. And this is a problem.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm sympathetic to that. Sure. And we give a lot of our money, you know, to help poor people. And even in the Bible, you know, the tithe was a law, right?
Right.
So,
right.
Well, great conversation. Lots of stuff. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Andrew.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3. WNRP Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
A peace plan for Ukraine. I'm Jack Callahan, Fox News. American diplomats presenting both Kyiv and Moscow with a plan to end the war in Ukraine as it approaches the four-year mark.
The president supports this plan. It's a good plan for both Russia and Ukraine, and we believe that it should be acceptable to both sides, and we're working very hard to get it done.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt, who denied reports that the plan favors Russia more than Ukraine. The plan reportedly includes security guarantees for Ukraine, but also the loss of some of its territory.